Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're broadcasting today from the Ohio Educational Technology Conference at the Greater Columbus Convention Center. Technology is changing education by helping teachers create personalized lesson plans for students. Joining us now is Director of Integrated Technology at the Ohio Department of Education, Stephanie Meeks. Welcome to the show, Stephanie.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Also with us is the Director of Innovation for Future Ready Schools, Tom Murray. Future Ready Schools is a project of the Alliance for Excellent Education. That's a Washington, D.C.-based education policy and advocacy organization. Welcome to the show, Tom.
It's great to be here. Good morning, Ohio.
Tom is also co-author of a new book. It's entitled Learning Transformed, 8 Keys to Designing Tomorrow's Schools Today. Tom, on the surface, this all sounds really awesome, using technology to personalize learning, but what does it actually look like in the classroom?
Sure, that's a great question, and good morning, everybody. You know, having the opportunity to do this work nationally, first and foremost, it's fascinating to look at how much teaching has changed, even just in the past 5 to 7 years. When you look at what our students need, when you look at their world of work moving forward, you have to focus on the why first. And so when we look at the why, and we look at the changing workforce, and we look at what's been coined the fourth industrial revolution with automation and robotics, the world of work for our kiddos is changing. And with that, their learning experience needs to change as well. When we think about the industrial model, and many of our listeners today, like myself, grew up with kind of desks and rows, students, our teacher-centric environment where we regurgitate information. Well, that world has completely shifted on the outside world. And so what is technology doing in the classroom? It allows us to create personal experiences for kids. It gives every student in the classroom a voice simultaneously. You know, in a very traditional environment where you have a teacher may ask a question, you get a couple of hands go up, they get one response from students, and they know what one of 25 students was thinking at that point in time, technology can allow the empowerment of all students responding at a time, which allows teachers to then shift their lessons as they're moving in real time.
Well, what's the difference? I mean, why can't all 25 kids raise their hand if they have something to say?
Well, they certainly can, but when you look at that environment, how many times do they all get the voice, all
right,
get the aspect of being able to share in what they're doing? So that's just one quick aspect. When you look at some of the pieces of technology that are adapting to where students are, many times in a traditional environment, teachers are forced to basically teach to the middle. Your high kids are, you know, go help somebody else once you've done this, and your low kids may be struggling. Technology has the adaptive ability, and this is really something that's in the past 5 to 7 years have really started to flourish, that it levels to where a student is. So if you're in a third grade classroom but you're struggling, it'll get down to your level to where you are and help move you forward. I want to be clear, though, this is not about replacing teachers by any means. This is about giving the teachers even better tools so that they can help make learning more personal and more authentic for kids.
Right. Stephanie Meeks, this is not just about virtual schools. It is, I know there's some virtual schools represented here at the mm-hmm. conference, but it's for regular public school classrooms.
It's for all classrooms, public, private, any classroom in Ohio, specifically about using Future Ready Ohio, but personalizing learning is something that good teachers have done always. But with the tools that they have now, it's easier and more effective.
You know, Ann, I'll build off that and say it's really important that our listeners today don't come across with the impression that this is just putting kids on computers, teachers just standing in the background. That is not the case at all. And if that's going on, that's not the purpose of any of that. This is still about high-quality teaching and learning, deeper learning, not just regurgitation type
facts. Give me
facts.
An example of
sure.
what you mean by
sure.
that.
Sure. If we think about traditional schooling, what we often think about is the regurgitation-based, where it's often just fact-based. We answer a question, we give a fact, and all of those, all that type of information is now available on our smartphone today, and that's very different than when we all grew up. So we talk about deeper learning. How is it that what they're learning connects to the real world? Any of the research on the effective use of technology or high-level learning deals with the relevancy to a student's world.
So
when students are at home, very often connected, when students are at home and they're able to access information anytime, anywhere, so long that they have connectivity at home, mm-hmm. if they come to school and get completely disconnected, there is a complete disconnect again between their real world, the world they live as a 9-year-old or a 15-year-old or whatever it might be, and a school environment. And so as we mesh those worlds together, they're able to see the relevancy, the real world application. The goal of schooling cannot just be to get this information and regurgitate information. It has to be to prepare them for their workforce moving forward and give them the skills to do it. We live in a digital world, and that's really difficult to argue with in that regard. So how are we making sure that students have the skills needed in this digital world to thrive? thrive and also leverage their passions and their interests, not just what everybody else thinks they should learn.
Are there any skills being lost, though, if you do, if you're taking out away that public participation, having that person raise their hand, having them speak in front of the whole class?
I don't think Stephanie? This takes that away necessarily. It's still a part of that. You still have to have, you know, people-to-people interaction. This allows it to go deeper. So say you're in a classroom and you have a student who is outgoing and gregarious and raises their hand and wants to talk, but you have somebody who maybe is more reflective and they can then reply in a digital way. It's almost like, how we have chats on Twitter. You know, sometimes you have time to think about what you want to say that you may not know immediately. So this does not replace that at all.
And what it does is it takes the real-world communication that we all use as adults. We use a variety of mediums. There's times we're face-to-face as adults. There's times we use a phone. There's times we shoot a text message. Well, we want to make sure that the relevant world there is also in our classrooms. You know, this is not about putting a headset on a kid for 8 hours sitting alone at a desk.
Not at all.
If that's the case, we are doing it completely wrong, and it's a disservice to kids.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We are broadcasting from the Ohio Educational Technology Conference at the Greater Columbus Convention Center. We're talking about technology in education, and especially looking at the issue of personalized education and how technology can create a personalized plan for a child, or at least help teachers do that, I should say. You just heard from Tom Murray. He's Director of Innovation for Future Ready Schools from Washington, D.C. He's also co-author of a new book. It's entitled Learning Transformed, 8 Keys to Designing Tomorrow's Schools Today. And also with us, Stephanie Meeks. She's Director of Integrated Technology at the Ohio Department of Education. If you have a question or comment out there, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. And we are going to be hearing from some teachers coming up later. So if you have questions for teachers, you might want to hold back on those for now. What about, you mentioned earlier, this is just bringing the world that kids are already living in into the classroom. I get that. But not all kids are living in that world. What about the technology gap? What about kids who don't have access to that at home and aren't connected in the way that you're describing?
Absolutely, and that's a fascinating question. Our work at the Alliance for Excellent Education does deal around the notion of equity and all meaning all. So, and what you're pointing to is often referred to as the homework gap. And I want to be clear, it's not really just about homework, it's about connectivity. Research shows that about 5 million of our nation's families lose connectivity when they go home. Disproportionately, it's our Black and Hispanic families. So what can districts do? It's really first and foremost important that districts understand that not every child in their classroom goes home to a connected environment, and we cannot increase that gap. So I think about districts like Spartanburg 7 in South Carolina that are working with their community businesses and have all of these community hotspots throughout their businesses where businesses are saying, our kids in our community are welcome here. When we think about our small businesses in our country, and where do those small business owners often live? In our communities. And we see communities rising up for connectivity. If you look any research on connectivity and families and jobs and income, there's direct correlations there. And so we want to help them get connected. So to your point, one, it's imperative that school districts keep that on the forefront and make sure that students that don't have connectivity, they can help them or help provide low-cost options. And I'm not saying districts have to pay for it, but awareness of some of the options that are out there. There's groups like Everyone On that support low-cost connectivity for families, but also to make sure that districts certainly keep that on the forefront to support those students, because the last thing we would want to do is take those living in poverty or those that are struggling with connectivity and create an even larger gap, because if that's what we're doing a complete disservice to students.
Yeah, and Stephanie Meeks, what's the Ohio Department of Education, where does it stand on that score? As far as making sure kids have access to the technology at home and connectivity?
Well, one of the things statewide is the there's a partnership with a group called the Education Superhighway that works on getting broadband out to schools, and then with individual communities trying to build other spaces. And in a lot of schools, especially in rural areas, the school is the hub of a lot of part of the community. So they are actually turning into the Wi-Fi or the hotspots for that local community, and parents and other community members can come in and join that. And in addition to that, local libraries are very wonderful at supplying that as well.
What has the buy-in been from teachers? How, some people are nearing the end of their career at this juncture at this new technology or industrial revolution or technology revolution, are they expected to do this, Stephanie Meeks?
I think that good teachers will always keep learning and growing and trying something new. I think there's a misunderstanding that veteran teachers don't want to do this, mm-hmm. and it's all the new teachers coming out. But there's a sweet spot in education. I think when you're comfortable in the classroom and you know your pedagogy, you know how to teach, and you know your students, you're more willing to take the risks, and it's not just the new shiny.
All right. So to that point, then, how do you measure success? Because teachers are getting, you know, measured mm-hmm. and graded themselves all the time. How do you judge if this technology is working?
There's a couple of ways to do that. I think one is in general, people talk about test scores, but there's multiple measures of success. There's technological ways to do it. I know in schools, administrators just do literal walkthroughs. And if you see every day going in that the students are engaged and that they're working together, they're collaborating, then you get the culture. It's about building the culture of the classroom.
And I'll add to that, first of all, a thank you to teachers. Teachers are the most loving, caring, supportive yeah. people who give their lives to other children. And that's something we can't lose sight of. But in the classroom, there has been tremendous shifts. And the teachers that are doing this best are teachers that realize this is not about them. This is about the children that we serve in the classroom. What is it that they need? And they're also realizing that technology is not there to replace them. Technology is there to take what they do to make it even better, to expand possibilities. Mm-hmm. When you see kids in Ohio connecting with other students from all over the world, that's things that we didn't have the opportunity when I was growing up back in the 80s. I didn't have that opportunity.
We had pen pals.
Pen pal, you'd hear, you know, a month later, you're here back. But when kids can collaborate together, when kids are able to create and design things, because again, this is about high quality teaching and learning first and foremost. And when we give kids the opportunity to use their voice, to leverage their passions, when we give kids the opportunity to create and to design, those are higher level skills. And those are the skills they need to move forward in their workforce. And technology is one component. It is a tool in the classroom to empower great teachers to do what they do even better.
Do you envision all of this replacing the traditional textbook in the future?
So we've seen a movement nationwide that has become more of a balance, because there's a lot of digital tools and a lot of those things that are out there. For me, and on behalf of Future Ready Schools, it's still about high quality content first and foremost. There's been this nationwide Go Open movement, which is kind of OER type open education resources that can be remixed, recurated, and that's been a large movement in the past number of years. But at the end of the day, we want to make sure it's not just that it's free. We need to make sure it's high quality first and foremost. And so we've seen districts start to move away from textbooks. You have to think many textbooks are out of date really the moment they get printed, and quite often don't get updated 7 or 8 years. When you take something like a social studies textbook and you look 7, 8 years down the road, think how much the world changes in 7 or 8 years mm-hmm. at this point. So digital resources are providing opportunities for that. But, you know, our stance is that, you know, is not that textbooks are bad or textbooks were evil by any means. It's still about high quality content, regardless of the medium, first and foremost.
Stephanie Meeks, what about concerns over screen time, just in general, how much time kids are on screens? Because you know they're going to be on them at home. Yeah. What about that?
I think the ideas behind personalized learning is that anywhere, anytime learning. So if they're at home on their screen, if they are involved in their schools in personalized learning, then they may be actually doing work. And maybe they think better at 7 p.m. at night than they do at 10 in the morning. So that is one piece of it. But again, it's about balance. It's always about balance. I would never expect, when I was a classroom teacher, I would never have planned a lesson that was all day, every day in front of a screen. That's not good for everybody, anybody.
So for me, all the work that I do, I look at it through the eyes of my own babies, Paisley and Caden. My little boy is 4, my little girl is 8. I would not put them on a screen all day long, every day. Why? Because I want them to be social. I want them to be doing, mm-hmm. you know, interacting with others. I want those face-to-face conversations. We cannot lose sight of the human side of all that we do ever. However, there's also a lot of research on screen time that is contrasting. Some places, you know, you see it from American Pediatrics. You see it in a variety of ways that give some guidelines, Common Sense Media has given some guidelines to it. For me, as Stephanie mentioned, the keyword is balance. What are they doing when they're on the device? If it's just something that's very low level, well, there's not going to be a whole learning that occurs. If they spend an hour on high level creation and design, well, that could be a lot better than sitting there watching TV. I mean, it's really, you know, you had the same conversation in the 80s or the 90s as TV, you know.
TV is screen time as well.
For us, from an education end, it's not just about the time, it's about the what they're doing during that time. Because an hour of creation and design can go by really, really quickly, but if it's higher level learning, that's a great thing. If it's an hour of just mind-numbing, consumption-based, well, it's going to be low-level learning, and that's certainly something we want to limit. But like Stephanie said, it's about balance. It's not about just putting kids on devices all day long by any means.
Tom Murray, I want to thank you for joining us. Really appreciate your time today.
It's been a pleasure to be here. Thanks for being in the great state of Ohio.
Tom Murray is Director of Innovation for Future Ready Schools. It's a part of the Alliance for Excellent Education. He's all in Washington, D.C. He's also co-author of the book Learning Transformed, 8 Keys to Designing Tomorrow's Schools Today. Stephanie Meeks, Director of Integrated Technology at the Ohio Department of Education, is going to stay with us. I hope you will, too. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher, broadcasting from the Ohio Educational Technology Conference at the Greater Columbus Convention Center. We're talking about how technology provides new tools to create a more personalized approach to learning. Still with us is Director of Integrated Technology at the Ohio Department of Education, Stephanie Meeks. Stephanie, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, nice to be here.
Joining us now is 8th grade science teacher with Dublin City Schools, Toby Carpenter. Welcome to the show, Toby.
Thank you so much for having me, Ann.
Dublin City Schools is a Google district. What does that mean?
Dublin has a partnership with Google to use their tools within our schools. Our elementary buildings use Google Classroom as their learning management system for the students. Secondary buildings, meaning middle schools and high schools, use Schoology that works really nicely with Google in that it allows us to use the Google Docs and the Google Slides in order to manage our classroom a little bit more efficiently.
So what does that mean to a kid?
A kid has a Google account. They have access to Google Drive, Google Slides, Google Forms, all kinds of
different educational topics, you mean?
These are all like devices that they could use to communicate. So it's like the equivalent of a Word document or the equivalent of a PowerPoint presentation.
Okay.
The ease of Google is that you can use it anywhere, anytime, and you can share it with each other. So it's very dynamic in terms of kids collaborating or sharing with teachers.
Real-time collaboration.
Absolutely.
Which is amazing. So no matter where you are, people can all work together on a project.
The same document.
You can have the same document.
Yeah.
You show up as one color, they show up as another color, and you can kind of actually even have a conversation through the Google Doc or the Google Slides.
Then you mentioned Schoology.
Yes.
Schoology.
Yes, exactly.
It's a learning management system. What does that do?
It's a way for us to kind of organize our classroom, kind of like an electronic filing system is how I would think of it. We can push out assignments to students. We keep track of grades. We can open up discussion posts. We can have some interactive opportunities with the kids that we may not have been able to do in a traditional setting. I know when Tom was here earlier, he was talking about giving some voice to the kids that maybe are a little more reflective, who need a little bit more time to process. So it gives the opportunity for every kid to participate.
Are you really noticing a difference?
Absolutely. Absolutely. What has been really cool with all of the implementation of this technology is really the personalization that you can do with learning.
So give me an example of a personalization.
Well, I have typically, you know, somewhere between 25 and 30 kids in my classroom. They're all not coming in at the same readiness level. They're not all coming in with the same
background.
And
they never have.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I think earlier in the show, they were talking about how teachers used to kind of teach to the middle. Well, this really allows us to take individual personalities, individual background knowledge.
So tell me what that actually, right. So tell me exactly What does that look like? How does it do that?
In my 8th grade science classroom, we typically take formative assessments all the time. The kids are really used to it. They know it's going to be scored. It's not going to be for a grade. But it's for me to get a sense of what do they know? What are they bringing to the unit? What kind of things are they making connections with early on versus maybe are having some misunderstandings or need some targeted instruction about some specifics.
And they know that this is about telling you where they're at,
absolutely,
not about what their bottom line grade is going to be.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And we have to have that conversation for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks before they really start to trust me on that. But now, you know, we're at to the point where they're like, oh, do I need to take the pretest, or I'm going to take the formative, or I see, oh, I've got a practice test. So they've used the language very, very comfortably now, and they understand how it benefits them.
So, I think it's a
ahead, Stephanie.
The feedback loop that was difficult a lot of times. I was a classroom teacher my whole career. I've only been with the department for 3 years.
Well, you're only like 21 years old, though. Okay.
Wow. I'm a lot more, but thank you, man. So being able to get immediate feedback and adjust your lessons as you're going for what people need is a very powerful use of technology, I think. And if, when you're doing formative assessments, are a way to get that. It's a ed term, but it's a way to get feedback for instruction.
Well, all right. So at a certain point in the school year, though, you've got kids all over the map, then, right?
Every day I do.
So how do you keep track of where they're at as you're walking through the classroom? Someone says has a question about one chapter. Someone will have a question about another chapter.
I usually try to, being a science teacher, we still kind of follow units, you know, so we're still in the same topic, but I might have some kids digging way deeper with the topic and some kids still working on that foundational knowledge.
Or so tell me how much farther somebody can dig on a topic.
I mean,
pick a topic and tell me how that works.
They can go crazy.
It's
fantastic. We're in the midst right now. My sub is running some plate tectonics lessons with my kids right now. So we'll run that as an example. I have kids who are creating their own plates and they're talking about how they could hypothetically be interacting with other plates on Earth using clay, and they're naming these continents and they're doing all kinds of fun stuff. I have then some other kids who are building Google tours where they tour around the world highlighting some geologically active locations around the world and talking about why they're so powerful, what's going on there, and how are we learning about
Earth. And what's considered the higher level? Is the design
sometimes it's hard to see. It really is about what is the target of that activity or that lesson. So some kids need very foundational information. So we'll target them in terms of like how do the plates interact? What is a plate? And then some kids need real world application, or they need to start creating their own work in order to kind of show what they can do. When you come into my classroom, I always
say it's
controlled chaos.
I want to be in
your
classroom.
There's all kinds of things happening. But what's really cool is because everybody's working at their own readiness level, they understand they get feedback too. Like these formative assessments give them some feedback. Here's where your learning is right now. Here's what you can do in order to move forward with this.
But eventually you have to get them all at the same point when it comes time for testing, right?
That's where the teacher has to come in. That's where the art of teaching is still practiced.
Absolutely.
Because it's not all about the technology. There is a lot of personalization with the person. So the teacher has to design these so that it can be, you know, like this kid's going to take this long and, they need a little bit longer. So we're going to have to kind of ebb and flow with the rest of the class so that we're all kind of, I like to try to end it at about the same time so that we can all begin again together.
I think just from an efficiency perspective, technology allows classroom teachers to focus their work on the actual teaching rather than sitting home and checking off papers.
Absolutely.
To do these formative assessments. You get very quick, active, engaged feedback right away rather than I take everything home and have to look through it and see what everybody's doing then
I can talk about what to
talk
do
about,
for instruction. Exactly.
You mean even in the formative testing where you're kind of just trying to see where they're at, you can see where they're at immediately?
Absolutely.
And you
real
can
time.
Kind of walk right up to them and say, I see you're kind of struggling with this.
Exactly.
Or,
let's address
wow,
it right
you just
now.
Whipped right through that.
Yeah.
Would you like to jump ahead?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And what's really cool is I can go over and the kid sees it too. So in Schoology, you can build feedback into the actual assessments that you give. So it might be, let's say it's a 5-question assessment. You're just trying to figure out, how are you doing with today's
topic?
Like
a quiz.
But when I call it a formative, remember it's not for a grade.
Right. There's no grade attached.
So it's scored, but not graded.
No grade.
So what happens is the kids go through and they might answer 5 questions, let's say. And they hit submit, instantly they can get feedback that I could build in saying, okay, so I see you understand this part. Tomorrow I'm going to have you go this way. Or, okay, this is not quite right. Let's revisit this. Or let's take a look at this activity. Meet me in the back of the room tomorrow at the beginning of the period. So you can really build in some specific things to cater to, like, okay, this is where your misunderstanding was. This is what we're going to do to address it.
And I think another part that we really need to talk about with personalized learning is the student agency,
yeah.
meaning their own ability to affect their own learning. This is empowering for students to get immediate feedback and know themselves mm-hmm. what they need to work on, and they can work with the teacher. It's inspiring them rather than being inflicted upon them
Absolutely.
Of what they need to do.
I'd like to build on that, Stephanie. Thanks for bringing that up. One of the things that we try to do too in my classes, I call it compacting. Compacting is an instructional strategy that students can use to get the foundational content quick mm-hmm. and then move forward into that deeper, richer kind of enrichment or extension type
what they
work.
Might think of as more fun.
Yes. Or more applicable. Like,
okay.
This
relevant.
Is where I'm going to use
this
it.
This answers relevant. The question not of what am I ever going to use this for in the real world?
Exactly. Well, and what's really cool is if you have kids that are like, oh, I see why we're doing this. Mm-hmm. This is starting to make sense to me. Mm-hmm. Back to my plate tectonics unit. My kids are like, why do we have to know this? We live in Ohio.
Right.
There's no volcano. There's no earthquake. We don't have trenches here.
But I actually was in an earthquake in Kent State.
Actually, our earthquake.
Exactly. To an
there's
eighth grader.
There's a seismologist.
So we have a big map on our on my front board of all of the earthquakes that have hit in Ohio. So they kind of are fascinated by that because they think that it doesn't happen. But anyhow, we can see that application because the kids can see what each other's doing. One other thing that I do with my kids is I call them roundtable discussions. So a lot of the times I'll have kids who are doing maybe a specific project or a specific activity. I'll say, okay, so you're going to be responsible for leading a roundtable discussion on Thursday. So what they'll do is they'll have maybe three or four kids. They're going to share what they've learned, and they're going to lead a conversation about that so that everybody gets to benefit from whatever specific path that one child took.
And you know what we talked about earlier with Tom, too, moving forward into these work environments, et cetera, and the skills that students need, this is a perfect way. They're learning that skill. The teacher doesn't write down skill for today is learning how to collaborate. However, building around that actual
that embedded
collaboration.
The less they know they're learning how to do something, the better.
Oh, they enjoy it so much more.
Sneak it in. No, they're usually very well aware of their learning targets, et cetera,
but absolutely.
Building what is called
the soft skills.
Yeah. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're broadcasting from the Ohio Educational Technologies Conference at the Greater Columbus Convention Center. We're talking about technology and education and how it's being used to personalize education. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to Toby Carpenter. She's an eighth grade science teacher with Dublin City Schools. Also with us, Stephanie Meeks, Director of Integrated Technology at the Ohio Department of Education. What are the challenges with this? What are the hiccups that you've encountered along the way?
I think one of the things I had to let go of was control. You know, when I first started teaching, I was like, well, this is what we're going to do on this day, and then we're going to take the test on this day. And then what I had to do is really think about the person who is doing the talking, the person who's doing the thinking, the person who's processing is the one who's doing the learning. So in my earlier days, was I the one doing that? And how much were the kids really doing? So pushing back to the work and having the kids do the thinking and the talking and the discussing and the processing really means that they're the ones doing the learning. So I think that was a real challenge for me personally, is I had to think about how can I structure my classroom so it's them that are getting all this enriching experience and I'm just letting it happen, or I'm setting up the circumstances and the environment so that they can have this.
So it's a challenge for control freaks.
I think so.
Yeah.
I would admit that I was one.
I'm trying. You know, it was probably considered a good quality to have
sure.
if you were a teacher.
It was. Yeah, that you, you know, somebody would walk in
snakes
your room.
Every morning.
Right.
Yeah.
And everybody was quiet,
doing the right thing.
And you were in
front
of the room. And now, you know, a controlled chaos environment is actually good.
Yeah.
And there's different things
happening.
When you
happening. Have more kids engaged and more kids participating in their learning, then there's more learning happening.
Are there some kids for whom this is not a great fit?
Yes.
I'm sure there are. Yeah.
Well, like Stephanie, tell me, who are you?
Well, I think just some kids who don't want to be in that kind of environment. Maybe a student who,
likes
for example,
quiet,
is,
maybe, yeah.
likes more quiet.
Who likes to be the one with their hand up in the
or
air
who likes to
and
be
wants
the
to
one.
Be called on. Okay.
And there's some people who just do not want to work in a collaborative environment. But our role as teachers is to help them through that and figure out how it works.
We have some kiddos that like to fly under the radar. Mm-hmm. So it's really about us making sure that every individual kid is getting their needs met, but is
and
getting
it's,
pushed.
And it's hard for kids who fly under the radar to not be accountable. And if you're in this kind
no
of
more
environment.
Sitting in the back of the class
right,
with your head
they
on.
They want
you,
to. Why yeah. can't you just let me do what I'm
right.
going to do?
And, yeah. and like, I can see it.
Yes, exactly. I know the other piece to this really that I think is important is allowing for kids to choose. And make a lot of choices within
their student
their learning.
The agency.
So, you might provide options for them and say, you know, I don't care how you learn it. Here's some different paths. The goal is this. So we're all going to get to this goal. It's just a matter of what's the best way for you to do it. And sometimes those formative assessments help us figure that out. Sometimes I'll say, here's your formative assessment information. But you know what's in your brain and you know what's in your gut. So let's make a choice based on using that data to inform our instruction or inform our decision, but then also use your gut. Like, you know you better than anybody else. Let's pick a path that's best for you.
Is there any indication that this kind of, between all the different measurements that are being taken all the time to use this kind of technology, that it's affecting the stigmatization of low grades, and it's not, you know, you're not just waiting to see what comes back on your top of your paper or on the test. There, you know, it's being measured all that time. Is it a good thing, or are kids still like blocking it and don't want anybody to know where they're at?
I think it's all about the culture that you set up in your classroom to some degree. I think we really focus on the learning. And so they know that this goal isn't the end all be, or this grade isn't the end all be all for them. Like, I'll have kids that come up to me and they'll say, like, gosh, I don't know that I did well on that. So I do know this. What do I need to know in order to go better with that? And it's become really powerful because they now ask questions that aren't just like, I don't get it. They ask questions like, this is the part that I don't understand. Help me understand that.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's really building some advocacy skills in kids, which is what we want for them, you know, later in life.
And it's going deeper into the learning.
Absolutely.
It's not just a test with you put down the right answers and somebody can copy off you. It's more if you do deeper learning, you're creating things. That's not something you can copy off of somebody else.
And most of the things that I try to assign kids, and when I say I'm using air quotes, you can't see me on the radio, but is more like things that don't have one right answer. Mm-hmm. So let's build something that could be totally different from everybody else in the classroom, but it's all going to address the solution or show your learning or however you want to do it. So that way kids have a lot of individualization in the product that they're creating as well.
I have to say goodbye to Stephanie Meeks. Thanks so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. You too. It was fabulous.
Stephanie Meeks is Director of Integrated Technology at the Ohio Department of Education. Also with us, Toby Carpenter, 8th grade science teacher with Dublin City Schools. Toby's going to stay with us. Hope you do too. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher, broadcasting from the Ohio Educational Technology Conference at the Greater Columbus Convention Center. We're talking about how teachers use technology to assess student progress and create a more personalized approach to learning in the process. Still with us is 8th grade science teacher with Dublin City Schools, Toby Carpenter. Toby, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Also joining us is Technology Integration Director for Westerville City Schools, Jennifer Fry. Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Technology Integration Director, what's that about? Because it seems like eventually your job's going to go away because technology's going to be everywhere. You aren't going to have to integrate anything.
True. I think that's kind of the ultimate hope and something that I've really seen grow over my evolution in my own career. I started as a classroom teacher. I've been with Westerville for 11 years, and I was a classroom teacher for five of those. And I really kind of felt like I was on an island at that point. By integrating technology into the classroom, not a lot of my peers were doing that. I was kind of out there by myself. But as we've developed our learning and teaching roadmap, which is our plan for student learning that incorporates technology to support that vision, it's become increasingly closer together.
I wanted to give listeners a sense about a timeline here. What was the tipping point? When did you stop feeling like an island? When did it become more generally accepted among classroom teachers?
I would say very much when we developed our district plan, which is our learning and teaching roadmap.
Which
and,
was?
That was 5 years ago.
Okay.
And that came out of our strategic planning, our district strategic planning. One of the big items that was over and over said by our community was that we want technology integrated into instruction and technology to support student learning. And so from that, we then had a group of educators that and stakeholders that worked together to develop our learning and teaching roadmap, which is very much our vision for what's for student-centered learning, and technology is a supporting tool for that.
What about you, Toby Carpenter? When did it become more of a norm in Dublin City Schools?
Well, just recently we've gone one-to-one with our sixth graders and ninth graders.
One-to-one meaning?
Meaning each student has a device
okay.
Available to them, and they take it home with them. So it's basically checked out to them throughout the whole
and
school year.
And that's part of the whole Google thing, right?
It's in conjunction with, but not necessarily. You could do one without the other,
okay.
Vice versa. Eventually, we're going to be one-to-one in all the middle schools by the end of next school year. And that might be new information to some of those Dublin teachers out there. We weren't okay. sure if that was going to happen.
How is this economically feasible, particularly with the way computers are changing all the time? How do you afford the gadgets themselves, the hardware.
I leave that up to the people at central office to figure out. But from what I understand, you might be able to talk to that a little bit
yeah.
more. It's a resource. So are we spending money on textbooks? Are we spending money on devices that can access technology? Like resources online. It's just a matter of are we spending it here or are we spending it there?
And that's exactly right. Typically we've spent money on big textbook adoptions, and that happens every certain amount of years. And so it's an investment, but it's a different kind of investment. And many districts will choose to take that money that they were using for other curriculum resources and put that towards technology now. Some districts will output the money and make the commitment up front. Part of that planning is also making sure that you plan for the refresh cycle, because the devices don't last forever. So that has to be planned for as well. So it's a very long-term planning process, if done well.
And as far as the devices going one-on-one with the kids, how's the maintenance of that work?
Obviously, there's going to be some upkeep to that. But we have people in the district that are ready for that and are working on it. And it's still new, and we're still encountering kinds of problems as we go. But with the people that we have working on them, we're doing everything we can to make sure that those kids have something that's working in their hands as often as possible.
Yeah. And one of the things that a lot of districts have gone toward, and Westerville is kind of in the exploration phase of, is using our students to be able to support those devices.
Well, like the IV kids.
Yeah, and to support, to have those students to be able not only to support the devices, but to be able to support the teachers and the other students with the instructional content as well. So, I can't, I'm in Schoology, I don't know how to create a test or quiz. I'm the teacher. I go to our student-led help desk, and that's something that they can help me with, as well as, my device is frozen. What should I do? That kind of thing. So it's kind of that first layer of support provided by our own students, which is developing great skills for them.
Yeah.
But, it's support right there, right then when they need it.
It's amazing how much our kids know. It really is.
Yeah.
Just give them the chance to show you.
And how not fearful they are to, if they don't know, to just dig in and try.
What about the parents in all of this? How do they fit into this equation?
I think there has to be good communication with your community on what you're trying to do with the devices, and building the understanding around, we're not just giving a device for, because it's flashy for all of our kids,
sure.
to say our district is one-to-one.
Right.
And Westerville's not currently one-to-one. That's not the point. The point is that this is a tool in this day and age that is an instructional tool, a very critical instructional tool, because it allows the student to take charge of their learning. If I always have access to learning in front of me, at home, after school, during school, at all times, I have access to the internet and all of my other tools that I use. That empowers me as a student, whereas if I don't have that tool readily available, you know, kids are put at a disadvantage. So it's really in the communication and helping parents to understand why they actually have the device.
Do you actually show parents what you're doing with the kids on the computers?
Absolutely. I think that's a big piece of our responsibility, is helping parents understand how education has changed. Because the way that I was taught is not the way that I'm teaching kids. And I'm pretty sure that's how my parents are too. Like, they say, gosh, you know, this isn't how I learned it. You know, I had a book. And, you know, so a lot of it is helping the parents see the trends in changing, and helping them understand how they can support their kids in ways at home that are different from ways that they were supported as a kid.
We're talking about using technology in teaching today. If you have a question or comment about that, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. Can you give us an example, Toby, of a project that students, that wouldn't have been possible without this type of technology?
I think a lot of the things that I do in my classroom now wouldn't be possible without the technology. And it's not necessarily because the project needs technology, but it's the way that we've gone about figuring out what the right fit is for the kid, if that makes sense. So, for example, earlier in the school year, we built pinball machines out of cardboard boxes and recycled materials. I gave them a list of stuff. This is what I'm going to give you access to. But for them to be able to understand the engineering of it, we had done some work with the computers ahead of time. They're constantly tinkering and looking at, some of them didn't even know what a pinball machine was, which is kind of funny too.
That's so sad.
But
those kids are missing out.
But it's that blended approach that I think is really cool, is we can use the technology to figure out when is the right time for you to start that type of a project. What degree are you expected to be able to go with that type of project, and making sure that everybody's needs are being met.
How does this affect teacher collaborations with each other among themselves? Is there an issue? Is there something there?
I think,
Jennifer,
that having the tools available has made for an evolution of how we communicate. I look back to the beginning of my career, and I had a team. And that was great. Lots of teachers didn't really even have a team. You just kind of closed your door and did your thing. There's so many tools for us to be able to collaborate now. I mean, we have, and for Westerville, we use Schoology as our learning management system, and all of our curriculum groups are housed in the LMS. And so that's one way we have discussions that can happen. We share materials in there, all kinds of resources. We're able to collaborate with our Google tools. I mean, just having access to Twitter and other social networking is, I mean, our teachers that are on Twitter are learning from other educators all over the world all the time, anytime that they open it up. And that's something that's very different and has evolved.
One of the things that's really cool, I'm sorry,
nope,
I don't want to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
But one of the things that's really cool with my colleagues is, we call them professional learning communities, or PLCs. So there's two other eighth grade science teachers that I work with on a day-to-day basis. Well, we put our lesson plans on a Google Doc. So now we have access to them all the time. We could have a full conversation with each other from home through that Google Doc. So we're talking about, hey, let's show this video clip to talk about this particular thing that the kids were, you know, struggling with. And, oh, I found this idea. But let's rearrange our classes tomorrow. I'll take the kids who are struggling with this. You take the kids that are struggling with that. And then we'll, you know, be able to I'll take some of yours. You take some of mine, that kind of idea. Mm-hmm. So it really has allowed for us to do a lot more collaborative work, because we can't know everything anymore. You know, like, I can't be the beacon of knowledge in my classroom anymore, because it's changing so much. And I really need to rely on my colleagues to help me, and even the kids, to help me make sure everybody's pushing forward.
Nicole in Worthington, you're on the air. Hi, Nicole.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. So I work in ed tech. My husband is in cybersecurity. And one of the things we're really concerned about is kind of the lack of peace that you find in FERPA as far as student protection. And, you know, these different LMS systems, the different apps, whether it's Class Dojo, anything like that, how we're decoupling individual student information.
I'm sorry, Nicole, you kind of are fading in and out.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know if my reception is good.
Nope, we're still losing you. Okay, I'm sorry. I think I know what Nicole wants to get at, though, and that has to do with protecting student privacy, student data. You know, everyone's plugged into Google.
where are the protections there? Google's not doing all of this for free. It's a profit driven business.
Sure, sure. I know that we have certain security checkpoints set up for the different levels. So like my students have an email, but they can't email anybody outside of the district, and they can't get email from anybody outside of the district. I think that changes as they move through high school, where it opens up a little bit more. The LMS system that we use is protected as well. Parents have access, but that's really all.
Right. It's considered a protected learning environment. So you know, prior to having an LMS, teachers might have posted pictures of their students or lessons, things that they wanted kids to have or parents to have on a website. Well, that was accessible by anybody anywhere, and now it's in this protected environment that only
that could be hacked.
True. Yes. So it's something that's very much becoming coming to the forefront in education. You know, we're using all these tools in creative and great ways and affecting, and then the thing that should have come first is how do we protect all our student data? Mm-hmm. And it's becoming a really important and involving conversation. It's super important. And how do we train our teachers and get them to understand the importance of, oh, you don't just click through the click wrap when it says, I'll use my Google account to go to this website and it'll create me an account. And now I don't have to put a username and password. Well, did you read what that was about and what the data is on that, what data it's taking? Or did you think about the fact that you're an elementary teacher and your kids are under 13 and you just sign kids up for a website by using by clicking through with their Google account? So these are really big questions that are becoming more and more prevalent. And how do we deal with that?
And I think it's just an ongoing conversation. For yeah. every time we think we've got it, the bad guys are going to figure something else out. So mm-hmm. we just have to stay on top of it as best as we can.
What does all of this mean? We've talked a lot about classroom learning, but what does all of this mean for school libraries? How are they changing to in reflection of this? Jennifer?
You know, when we talk about personalization, our libraries are one of the best examples of embracing that whole concept of being a place where kids can come to evolve their learning. Our libraries in Westerville, you know, it used to be you went and you checked out books. And that's not the case at all anymore. You walk into our libraries and you can participate in virtual reality. You can do a makerspace, a design challenge in a makerspace. You can get a lesson from the librarian, might be on media literacy, mm-hmm. digital literacy, technology skills. There might be quiet study space. There's collaborative spaces. There are such a wide amount of activities that are happening in our library and media centers. They have completely changed, and they reflect personalization because of the amount of different things that are going on to meet kids' needs.
You know, you bring up an interesting, you made me think of something as far as, you know, we really don't have to teach kids how to use a computer anymore. Those days are over with, right? Because they're all natives now. But what about the whole social media thing? How much teaching is going on as far as teaching kids how to manage that world out there, that digital world?
Right, so that's another big reason that our library media specialists are so important, because
that's what they do.
That's what they do. That's one of the components of what they do. They do a plethora of things, but media literacy is a huge component of their work. And so that, you know, from kindergarten, that looks one way to third grade, all the way up through, those are different conversations and different learning experiences for kids. But when you think about the totality of kids seeing a library media specialist from K to 12 and all of that learning that's been compounded about how we're responsible, how are we a good digital citizen, how do we protect ourselves and not give our passwords away to our best friend, or right. not post terrible things on social media because that's always going to be there. Those are things that our library media specialists do every day.
Hmm. And do you think it's helping?
I do. For sure, it's valuable work. I would say it's work that we all need to own. And that's kind of the evolution, too, is every single person in the educational environment has to own this. Because just like you said, well, there's not even going to be a need for your job anymore, Jen, right? Technology integration.
Kidding, Jen.
Well, truthfully, but there's a need for us all to own all the parts of it. So digital safety, security, and citizenship
Absolutely.
Are a huge component. It can't just be owned by our library media specialist. It can't just be owned by our tech integration coaches. Everybody has to own that and figure out how we educate our kids with that.
Jennifer Fry, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Jennifer Fry is the Technology Integration Director for Westerville City Schools. Also, Toby Carpenter, thanks for getting out of the classroom today and joining us down here.
Oh, I love talking about what I do. Thank you.
Toby Carpenter is an 8th grade science teacher with Dublin City Schools. We are broadcasting from the Ohio Educational Technology Conference today at the Greater Columbus Convention Center. Thanks for joining us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.